Cannabis Radio. Wowee, this is pretty exciting.
Good morning.
Good morning. Kiko here in the lobby of the Line Hotel on a day that I've been waiting for about a year. This is so cool. I wish I could fully describe the picture, but there are all these food and beverage people milling around and all these creative types, kind of like ants in an ant house. Everybody has their job and everyone's running, getting this hotel open. And the energy here is really, really just buzzing. So it's great to be here. And I get to be here with my first and sweetest friend in DC, Maddie, who I'll talk about soon. So I'm Kiko. This is Full Service Radio at the Line Hotel in DC. And today we're kicking off Lunch Agenda, which is a virtual lunch date that offers us all a chance to be food activists. And that's my show. So each week at noon, I'll be sitting with doctors, parents, policymakers, and more to hear their agenda for the food system. And I'm going to ask each of my guests for one action that you, the listeners, can take to change things for the better with our food system. Why not spend your first lunch break of the week working for a better food system? So I hope that you will tune in as you're walking to pick up your lunch or munching at your desk, although I will admit I am an advocate for taking a break from the screen for lunch. But whatever you do for lunch, I hope you'll join me on Mondays from 12 to 12:30. And I hope that you'll check out my website, Kiko's Food News, for pictures from the show. And I'll put any links there that my guests are referring to. So yeah, let's get started. The show is going to be a combination of interviews with all different types of guests. I've just met so many smart and passionate people in DC since I moved here 5 years ago. And I've worn a lot of hats in the food world here. So right now I work as the director of breadjudication at Salu, which is a 1 month new bakery and grain mill in Shaw, which is a really fun neighborhood about 10 minutes south of here where we are in Adams Morgan. But my foundational DC food experience was working for 3.5 years at the Capital Area Food Bank, which is the largest hunger and nutrition nonprofit serving this region. And it was there that I was able to talk with all different kinds of Washingtonians. So I talked with mothers and seniors and kids about various challenges they face to eating good food. I've also been lucky enough to work with some really great food brands in this area, from Glenn's Garden Market, which is an all-local food grocery store, obviously food grocery store, to Trickling Springs Creamery, which makes the most divine butter and milk and other dairy products around. Before that, I learned about food growing and food distribution and retailing at a group of unparalleled food businesses out in San Francisco called Byright that I'm sure I'll talk about over the course of our time together. And before that, Williams-Sonoma. So I will hope to bring all of these perspectives to the conversations I have with guests here on Lunch Agenda. And now to introduce my esteemed guest for the day. So today I am welcoming to the studio Maddie Beckwith. Hi, Maddles.
Hi.
This is a treat. I met Maddie the first weekend I moved to DC over at Union Market. There was an event going on there with the Good Food Awards, and Maddie was introduced to me at that point as, a leader at Fresh Farm, which is the nonprofit that runs so many of the farmers markets around DC. But Maddie has worn many hats in our nation's capital's food system over her 19 years of living here. She was a server, or no, she wasn't a server. She worked behind the scenes at once famous but now shuttered Palena, which I actually am curious to hear her talk about. And she also worked for over a decade at Fresh Farm, the amazing organization that I just mentioned. She currently and has for years invested in local food and drink businesses, and she recently has been putting on some gorgeous and just divine dinners with the hummus gurus over at Little Sesame. So with those varying perspectives in mind, She will be the first guest to offer Lunch Agenda listeners one action item for how they can be food activists. Hi, Maddie.
Hi, Kiko. Thank you for having me.
Sorry for blabbing thus far. How was your weekend?
It was great. Congratulations on your first radio show.
Thank you.
I'm honored to be here.
I don't think I could have been here without you, so thank you. What are you having for lunch today?
This. This is my lunch.
Okay.
I'm getting some good nutrition from your words of wisdom. I think I'm probably having leftover turkey from yesterday's Thanksgiving, which I only just had in December.
Oh, that's what Sue's served?
Yes.
Was a Thanksgiving meal?
We had Mexican Thanksgiving.
Ooh, interesting.
Why not? In December.
An Annapolis December Christmas party with Thanksgiving dinner. I like that. Well, I was hoping for lunch in the line, and I'm just going to have to wait a little longer for that, but it's going to be delicious when those are open. So I have some questions for you, Mad, but first what I'm going to do is open the show with something that I plan to offer weekly, which is a little bit of Kiko's food news.
Great.
Kiko's food news is something that I started in my San Francisco life when I was at Byright, and we wanted to offer to our guests more information than simply about the food that we sold. We wanted to offer the latest news headlines related to farming and related to food distribution and grocery and access and everything in between. So I scour news regularly for what's going on in the food world. And so each week I'll raise one or two points or news pieces that I think readers should know about to, you know, learn more about food. This week, I'm going to, you know, have us talk about one topic that we girls can share thoughts on, which is the fact that the Me Too movement has come to the food world. And that's pretty crazy.
Indeed. There's been a lot of coverage of a lot of big male names in the restaurant industry.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting turning of the tides for women who've historically not had a lot of voice.
Yeah, it's funny because first the Mario Batali article came out. And, you know, we learned that four women accused Mario Batali of inappropriate touching over the past two decades. But he didn't deny the allegations. He says they match up with how he's behaved. So first there was that. And then Ken Friedman, who, you know, Maddie has been immersed in restaurants longer than I have. So that's an old name for her. I actually didn't know about Ken Friedman, who is the restaurateur who's opened Spotted Pig and several other restaurants with April Bloomfield. And the allegations against him were.
Yeah, that's especially interesting since his partner is a woman.
Yeah.
Who, and I think her being quiet is probably going to be more detrimental than the actions that he actually has been exposed of doing.
Mm-hmm. Say more about that.
I think it's not a surprise to women that men in this industry often behave badly, but to have a woman as an equal partner who supposedly or understandably sat through it quietly and didn't say anything, I think is going to make it really difficult for her to move past this or for her leading that restaurant group to move past this.
I mean, it's kind of like as a woman leader of so many staff who look to her to set the example, you know, what do you say now? But I mean, it's funny. Nick was talking to his grandma yesterday. Nick is my husband for the listeners, and you'll probably hear me refer to him often because he has a lot to say about food and otherwise. And, you know, his grandma and her classic Bronx accent was, you know, well, I'm not surprised about any of this. You know, ladies in the old days in Hollywood, they had to sleep their way to whatever roles they wanted. And the same must be true for women in food. And these days, there's a lot of women banding together and trying to build opportunity for women in the kitchen, women in restaurants, women in farming, and all different parts of food. But, I mean, this is clearly such an example of the barriers that were stopping women from being the leaders is, you know, this notion that you needed to, like, use yourself and your womanhood to get anywhere that you wanted to be. And I don't know, it's just, it's It's really for me, who lives in 2017, who thinks that, you know, women have rights these days and we can do whatever we set our minds to learn about what's been going on in the West Village of New York, you know, for so long, is just shocking.
Yeah, I think that a lot more things will come out as people, as women feel supported to have their voices heard.
Yeah. And which makes me wonder, like, if you are a Mario Batali who comes right out and says, yes, this is what I did, but you haven't been called out yet, are you just kind of like walking around in fear, just waiting for the shoe to drop?
There was an advent, I think, over the weekend of somebody not in food, but I think in entertainment, who came out in it ahead of accusations, saying sort of me too in the male perspective, like I am guilty as well, without there being accusations coming out about him, which is an interesting trying to get ahead of it.
Yeah.
I don't expect that many men will do that, but I think a lot more accusations will start to come out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the restaurant industry overall, though, remains pretty protective of its own. And I think it's going to be hard to get people to go on record. A lot of the accusers, I mean, the Ken Friedman story was a little bit unique in that they were willing to be named and photographed, but a lot of the other accusers in this, in hospitality and in this field, remain anonymous. And I think it's for fear of some backlash.
Yeah. Yeah. For fear that they're, that they couldn't work in another restaurant, or that, you know, wow. So anyways, that's you know, what
news
was most interesting to me this week in at the intersection of food and those of us who consume it and want to, you know, understand the industry better. We're going to take a quick break. And when we're back, we're going to hear a bit about Maddie's thoughts for my show and her thoughts for you. Back. All right. We're here on Lunch Agenda. This is Kiko speaking. I'm your host, and I'm here with Maddie Beckwith, 19-year-old DC veteran, has worked in food all the way through. And so I am constantly picking her brain as I navigate the interweaving food scene here. So we just covered some food news, and now we're going to move on to a little bit more about what you can expect with Lunch Agenda. I'm going to try to have us cover topics in little multi-week chunks. Jack, who's producing Full Service Radio, said that that would be a way to help you know what to expect as you're listening to my show. So I'm going to float a few of those theme topics by you, Maddie.
Great.
And I would love you to suggest guests that I could talk with, or even just tell me, like, you know, maybe what would be an interesting organization to profile, or even just tell me, you know, which of these topics is sounding interesting to you or not, or tell me whatever you want.
Shoot.
I'm thinking about starting with this segment on groceries for everybody, groceries for all, because I just was so moved and ignited by the grocery walk that happened in Southeast DC about a month ago, where myself and other nonprofit, you know, food nonprofit people and residents and you know, city council members and hundreds of us marched from the only giant grocery store, the only full service grocery store in the ward we were in all the way to downtown Anacostia, not passing any other grocery service, grocery offering on the way. And there have been some interesting announcements made by Bowser's government since then, and by various retail players, where I'd like to kind of hear about what the impact of that march was, and what's next for making sure that all DC residents have access to groceries and, you know, to nutritious food.
Kiko, what do you, are you envisioning that this show be an opportunity as an expose of what's happening in DC, as an example of what's happening in the country at large, or sort of what is happening in our community in food, and how different do you think the experience of having food availability is in other urban areas and the comparison to DC?
Yeah. Gosh. I think, I should talk to Jack more about this, about how much we should be, you know, making a broader statement. I think that Jack finds it interesting to think about DC as it relates to other cities in America. But that's a good point. I mean, maybe I could have a friend or two call in who are doing similar work and across, in San Francisco or in New York.
Dispatches from abroad.
And we
can
talk about, like, what are the barriers to people in Southeast versus what are the barriers to people in other, you know, parts of other cities. And also, you know, I like, there are so many barriers. It's money. It's, you know, a highway being between someone and the grocery store and they don't have a car. It's even, you know, someone feeling comfortable in a grocery store in their neighborhood. So, getting different ideas about the reasons would be good, but I'm taking that note down. Thank you. So another topic that I'm looking to cover is this notion of food as medicine. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm going to call it a hokey name, like pharmacy with an F. So on that one, I definitely want to have doctors on the show. There's this one amazing doctor who spoke at the Food Bank's Health and Hunger Summit about the role that food has begun to play in her hospital system. First of all, in the sense that she needs to screen, she believes that every doctor should screen their patients for food insecurity just by asking simple questions about, like, you know, how often do you cook at home? How much are you eating fruits and vegetables at home? Just making sure that access is not an indicator of health for her patients. But she also has talked about how many people within her hospital who work there a full-time job qualify as food insecure at home. And it just, for someone who is concerned with the health of people, she's just had her eyes, you know, so opened to realize that food insecurity is right under her nose in you know, with people who she works alongside, whether they're nurses or you know, people, you know, keeping the hospital clean or other things.
I think that's a really good intersection of food and health, because I think that primarily all of the diseases that we're beginning to suffer from as a population are connected to our diets.
Yeah. Yeah.
And preventative care is ultimately cheaper than treatment.
Yep. You nailed it. And so I'm hoping to bring on maybe Lauren from DC Greens, who founded DC Greens. They're doing one of the most direct programs on this, in the sense that they are working to connect people who go to Walker Jones for medical care. The doctors there are prescribing fruits and vegetables, and then those people leave with vouchers to get free produce to bring home and cook with. Any other thoughts on, you know, people really at that intersection of measuring? You know, one of the biggest challenges on that topic is measuring the impact of healthy food is so hard because you don't have an immediate bodily reaction.
I mean, I think also when I was at Fresh Farm, and we developed over the course of my tenure there a very integrated system in the DC public schools and working with children mm-hmm. to teach them how to eat correctly or how to prefer that type of food.
Right. I like
versus,
that, how to prefer.
Yeah, working on preference. And I think there's definitely a young childhood education link. But again, that would be a longitudinal study that would be a little bit hard to have results for at this juncture. But like seeing how if you grow up with being exposed to certain things, if that changes your preference and your attitude and ultimately your health.
And I'm really interested in having experts in childhood nutrition on the show. You know, one of the other topics I'm hoping to explore is like what I'm calling cool parents, healthy kids, but just about, you know, kid eating. And there's really innovative work going on by Aussie, you know, the, you know, but for the listeners, the Office of the State Superintendent of Education, about habit forming in early childhood centers. So we're talking preschool aged kids who are being taught about family style eating and how to serve each other from a communal plate and how to balance their plate by choosing what goes on their plate versus, you know, opening a predetermined tray. And so being mindful of how they can create a rounded meal for themselves and things like that. So that should be fun conversation too. One more topic that I am planning to delve into is cooking on a budget. So people like Juju Harris, who just came out with her second edition of what she's calling Healthy and Homemade. She was a mother who cooked for her children when she was using WIC benefits herself and was able to provide bountiful, super tasty meals for her family and is trying to share the skills she learned with others. Jody Bayless at the Food Bank, who is their registered dietitian, but also does a lot of pre and postpartum nutrition and teaching families how to cook mindfully as well. But so those are just a few of the topics. I'm not going to blab any more about those. Any overall thoughts about topic suggestions, Maddles, or anyone that you think I should, any topics that go beyond restaurants that really highlight some of the great work that nonprofits in DC are doing or farmers or anything?
I think being in the Mid-Atlantic, you do have pretty good access to farming communities where other urban areas, we're sort of in the breadbasket of the Eastern Seaboard, and taking advantage of learning a little bit about the food system from the people who are growing it,
mm-hmm.
And bringing farmers and producers into the studios and hearing how the food system changes or what changes they can affect.
Yeah.
From the growing side of it.
Yeah. I think I'll do that first with grain growers.
Good thinking.
We'll do a little bit of breadjucation. I think I said that my official title is director of breadjucation. So I'll have the founders of Seilu talking about what it means to actually bake with whole grains. And then we'll have Heinz Tomet probably, which is their local farm hero who grows food at Next Step Produce in Maryland, talking about his partnership. And but you're right. I mean, we don't get enough. My whole premise is giving the microphone to people who don't get interviewed as much. And I think farmers don't get to talk enough about what they're doing. The best conversations these days that DC residents have are at the farmers markets.
Exactly.
But I bet you that people would like to tune in on their lunch break and learn a little bit more.
Great.
So with that, I'm on the edge of my seat to hear the first agenda item that will be offered by a guest on Lunch Agenda. As I mentioned, this is the opportunity for you to hear my guest, who is a knowledgeable food pro, offer one thing that you can do in your life to have a positive impact on the way the whole food system fits together. Just one little thing. So Maddie, what is one little thing that you offer to our guests?
Well,
not our guests, our listeners.
As a friend, I'm sure this will slightly surprise you because we share many meals together, and I am an avid omnivore. But I think steal Michael Pollan's thunder, but I think really the most important thing that we can all do on a daily basis is just to choose more vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, I frame it like that because I don't want it to sound like a punitive don't eat meat or eat less meat. I think one will naturally eat less meat if one eats more vegetables. Mm-hmm. And I think the impact of animal husbandry in the way that we are doing it in this country now has some of huge implications for environmental problems, climate change, health problems. I mean, it's pretty much across the board. And I again, to reiterate, I don't feel that meat is a sin. I don't feel that anyone needs to become a vegetarian or a vegan necessarily. But I think overall, our days and our future would be better served by eating more vegetables, as well as the farmers who need to be able to grow and sell their products. And, you know, to look for a more diversified diet is going to benefit everybody.
So it will build a market for farmers who grow produce.
Correct.
What else is the positive impact? Why does eating more vegetables help our food system?
I think that it lowers our reliance on animal protein, and animal protein is the consumption of animal protein, the way that we do it in this country and at the on the amounts and the levels that we do it, is really negatively affecting our climate and our environment.
Right.
So I think just eating more vegetables is a positive spin on the message of probably eating less meat. And I think that almost all other cultures rely on meat as a treat, as a flavoring, not the center of the plate.
Yeah. What veggie have you been craving most lately?
I'm still a little stuck on pumpkin. I know, like, pumpkin's gotten a real bad rap coming into sort of the cultural ethos, and I don't mean like a pumpkin latte, but
savory pumpkin?
I enjoy eating pumpkin, winter squashes.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. They have a pretty inherent amount of sweetness, which makes it extra delicious.
Totally. Very rich. And I guess I'm going to tag on one question for you, because you are such a selfless giver to the DC food community and those trying to help people who don't have meals at home all the time. I know you volunteered with Miriam's Kitchen regularly and many other organizations. Where do you think are the best people to places to volunteer this holiday season? I've actually had a couple friends email me about volunteering at the food bank. But any thoughts on a good opportunity to volunteer?
That's a great question. I like the idea of giving a gift of your time as opposed to giving a gift of money.
Mm-hmm.
DC, I think, is pretty unique in that we have a pretty good base of volunteers. It's a pretty young population, and people are pretty activist population.
Yeah.
So I more often than not run into problems of people don't need the help that you want to offer. So I think perhaps looking to not the well-known names, and I won't name names, of organizations that everybody gives their time or money to perhaps going across the river or perhaps going into other wards and seeing what the needs are there and volunteering there as opposed to close to home.
Yeah.
So get out somewhere in a new neighborhood.
I like that. That's good inspiration. Yeah, I'm, you know, piggybacking on what you just said about there's a lot of young people in D.C. and or there's a lot of activist-type people in D.C. I have to say that's why I'm choosing food activism for this show. That's why I think, you know, there are so many conversations to be had, because having moved to D.C. 5 years ago, I just am always amazed by how people here are on a mission. It's the coolest thing about living in D.C. Some people work for the government. I randomly don't run into those people as much. But if you don't work for the government, you're here because you work for an environmental policy organization, or you're a public defender, or it just, when you go to a dinner party, people, you know, talk about their work a lot. And I find that interesting. You know, I think people feel that life is worth making change so anyways, I agree. I think that that people in DC are hungry to make their time count and get involved, and so I hope that our listeners will heed Maddie's advice and lend a hand this holiday season. So that's about all the time we have for today.
Thank you so much for having me, Kiko. I'm honored to be here.
Well, you are the perfect eye candy for the chair next to me in launching Lunch Agenda, and I couldn't have felt as comfortable without you. I did have a friend peeking in, taking pictures of our interview, so if you want to see those pictures, you can check them out on my Instagram, which is Kiko Buff, and If you share this podcast over social media, once it comes out, you can use hashtag Lunch Agenda. Today's episode was edited by Jack Inslee for Full Service Radio at the Line Hotel, and we'll see you next Monday at noon.